Hello, and thank you for listening to the Total Health Podcast. My name is Rosie Piercy. I'm a chiropractor and clinic director, and I find the subject of health fascinating. In this podcast, every fortnight, we'll be discussing health from a different perspective. I hope you enjoy. Hi, my name's Rosie from the Total Health Podcast, and I'm delighted today to have Tracy Whitty talking to me about vitamin B12. Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Rosie. Lovely to be here.
Brilliant. So let's start. Just tell me something. Tell me about yourself.
Well, I left school at 16 because I had no idea what I wanted to do apart from travel. So I spent my late teens and early 20s travelling and working abroad. Mm-hmm. And at 24, I went as a mature student to train as a furniture maker and upholsterer. And it was really in 2012, it's in fact 8 years ago this month, that B12 deficiency interrupted my life. And then in 2013, I created B12deficiency.info because I wanted to make the lives of B12 deficient people better by making it easier for them to access accurate information about this complex vitamin.
And your website is amazing. It's got lots of information on there that's easy to read and digest, isn't it? So it's not written for medical people so much, although there's a lot of good information if you are a medical person, but it's written for normal people to pick up and read, isn't it, really?
That's right. I mean, it's written from the patient's perspective. So mm-hmm. If you find this and you think you might be B12 deficient, it is hopefully written in an easy form, but it's full of journals. So I do know that there are clinicians who use the site to educate themselves.
That's good. So how did you come across it being B12 that was your problem? What kind of symptoms were you having?
My biggest symptom was memory loss, but I also suffered from insomnia. I went grey. My hair started to go grey in my early 30s. I had anxiety. I experienced multiple early miscarriages, abnormal pap smears, bowel and bladder problems. I had hot flushes, a swollen tongue, and nominal aphasia, which is when you have difficulty recalling names or words of things.
Gosh, there's quite a lot going on then. So were there a whole battery of tests they ran on you before they got to B12 or as being the...
The reason I started the site was because I was researching for somebody close to me who was seriously ill. Mm-hmm. And it was through researching for them that I found that their problem might have been B12 deficiency or a thyroid problem. Mm-hmm. And whilst researching for them, I realised that I had so many of these symptoms. And so it was easy for me to direct my doctor to just test my B12.
Because it's quite an easy test, isn't it? Is it just a blood test?
It is a blood test. There are problems with a blood test in the sense that it tests all B12 in your system, so active and inactive B12.
Okay.
Having said that, it is a good, gives you a good baseline. There are documents on my website, point four on the what to do next page, which mm-hmm. help your doctor to understand that within range result might not be a perfectly healthy patient because the test has its flaws.
Okay, so you can be like, say, at the low end of the normal range, but still be deficient in B12, for instance.
Yeah. If you're symptomatic and you're within range, then your doctor really does need to look at the documents that are there. There's some from the BMJ, NHS ones. There's a condition called functional B12 mm-hmm. deficiency, which is where there's a problem with getting B12 from the blood into the cells. And the NHS do document this on their website. So there are things that our doctors need to understand about the serum B12 test, that it's not simply a question of you're deficient or you're not deficient. There's a cloudy area.
It's not that easy then.
No.
So what kind of, obviously you've mentioned some of the symptoms that you had there, but are there kind of the most common ones that people come up with, or like tiredness, or is there something to think?
That's right, yeah. There are some, I think the first presenting symptoms for many people are numbness and tingling, okay. Depression, chronic fatigue, anxiety. So my symptoms, for example, are very different to that of my siblings and okay. other family members. Every single person can present with a different set of symptoms, and there are many symptoms of B12 deficiency. You'll see that there's a huge list on my website, and they are the most common. But having said that, that is not all of the symptoms. People find that symptoms they have that they reverse out of and they're not on the list.
Okay, because there is a really long list of symptoms, isn't it? An amount of things that it kind of mimics, like quite scary things it can mimic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, B12 deficiency affects every single body system. It affects both sexes and it affects all ages. Unfortunately, our doctors really tend to look for it in women over 60. Okay. But of course, children can start with this. It can be misdiagnosed as many different illnesses. So Parkinson's, bipolar, fibromyalgia, Alzheimer's, dementia. And it's really key that if you are presenting with any of these kind of symptoms, and particularly memory loss, that you aren't just sort of pigeonholed as a mental health patient without having screening for B12 deficiency.
So is that part of a normal blood test, or is it a different blood test that they would have to run?
Yeah, it really requires our doctors to understand about B12 deficiency, because it doesn't come as part of a full blood count.
Okay.
It has to be asked for separately, and it really should be done in conjunction with a folate test and a ferritin test too.
Are they different types of B12, B vitamin, or is ferritin iron?
Folate is vitamin B9. It's really the big sister to B12, so that needs checking. Ferritin is your iron storage, and that can be, but not always, it can be very low in some patients. Some of our doctors understand that, or they've been taught that anemia must always be present with B12 deficiency, but that's not always the case. That can be a very late presentation. So not all patients are anemic.
Okay, so is there a best way to approach a doctor? Quite often people are nervous to go to the doctor and say, I want this, because they feel like they're telling them what to do. So is there a good way of doing that?
Well, I think it can be tough for patients, because I think generally speaking, patients worry about challenging their doctors. Mm-hmm. But I think that some of the doctors respond well to actually being given a few clues. And I think if you go in, do your research, look at the mm-hmm. symptom list, look at the potential causes, see if any of those strike a chord, see if there are any family members that have B12 deficiency. And if you go in with just, you know, talk to them about your symptoms and then suggest that you are tested for this very common deficiency.
Okay, so is there a genetic component then? Does it run in families, or?
It does run in families. I mean, it can be a genetic methylation problem, or it could be autoimmune pernicious anemia. But it can be because you're taking a drug like metformin for diabetes that inhibits absorption of B12. There are other drugs that cause that too, acid suppressants, for example. So there are so many causes. Unfortunately, again, our doctors concentrate on pernicious anemia as being the only cause of B12 deficiency that needs treating. But of course, there are so many. That's probably, in lots of ways, the tip of the iceberg. It's quite difficult to achieve a diagnosis of pernicious anemia, because the intrinsic factor antibody test and the parietal cell antibody test can have low sensitivity. So therefore, even if you have got pernicious anemia, it may be tricky to actually achieve a diagnosis of that.
So what's pernicious anemia, if people aren't familiar with that?
Well, pernicious anemia is autoimmune deficiency, so where you have a lack of intrinsic factor or intrinsic factor antibodies in the stomach, and intrinsic factor is required to take B12 from food and draw it through to the small intestine where it's absorbed.
Okay, so how do we get B12 into our bodies? Is it primarily through food? Is that where we should be taking it from?
Yeah, I mean, animal products are the only food source that contain B12. So if you're a vegan or a vegetarian and you're limiting your intake of B vitamins, then you need to actually supplement properly.
Okay.
It is not true that there is B12 in seaweed or spirulina or mushrooms. It's not in a form that's bioavailable. So if you are following a vegan diet, you really need to read up about where to get vital nutrients from.
So, and can you get them from just tablet form generally?
Well, some people, if you can absorb B12 well, then an oral tablet will be a good form of supplementation for you. But there are so many things that can crop up in the pathway of absorbing B12. Mm-hmm. So there are some sublingual tablets that some people do well on. But really and truly, the best form of administration for B12, if you can't absorb from food, is injection. It's been proven and it's been safely used for over 50 years.
Because you can't overdose on it, is that right?
No, you can't overdose on it. You'll excrete out any that isn't used. Okay. I'm really lucky in that I am able to access from my GP a weekly injection, and that's what keeps me really well. But unfortunately, in the UK, many patients are restricted to just 4 injections a year, mm-hmm. And that keeps so many people unable to function properly, bedbound, mentally ill.
Gosh, that's hard.
Yeah, that was kind of brought in, this 3-monthly mm-hmm. Administration was really done as a cost-saving exercise, okay. And it really okay. doesn't have any bearing on the quality of life for patients.
So if you are having B12 and you notice your symptoms are coming back before 12 weeks, is that something you should discuss with your doctor then?
Yeah, I really think you should. You know, it's like saying to somebody, you can have meat to eat 4 times a year if you really need animal products. 4 injections a year is really not going to be enough. Some of our doctors think that you can overdose on B12. So what happens quite frequently mm-hmm. is that doctors will, when a patient goes in and asks for more B12, they'll mm-hmm. test their B12 levels as a way of deciding whether or not that patient needs mm-hmm. more B12. And actually, that's a ridiculous way of testing that, because the patient is in front of you and is discussing how their symptoms have come back and how they're feeling. The blood test won't tell you how the patient's feeling. And in fact, the BMJ and lots of other agencies suggest it is not wise to test B12 levels once on treatment, because it doesn't give you a true picture.
That's quite interesting then. So it's not just say you saying it, or that is actually the BMJ and they know about these things. They've done evidence research to come up with that conclusion. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And my site is filled with journals and information. So if people are concerned about it, they don't have to listen to my voice. They just have to read the journals that are placed within the site.
And I guess then they can just take the information from there and like almost show the GP the journal, so that the GP can like or print out the relevant bit, because journals can go on a bit sometimes, can't they? But
it's really important to note that our GPs have really been done a huge disservice by not being trained in B12 deficiency. If you're not taught to look for something, then it's very difficult to look for it. So oftentimes patients with B12 deficiency are taking in information to their GPs to try and get well, but also to help the GP to understand the gaps in their knowledge.
It's quite interesting, because we had a previous record of this podcast where the sound quality wasn't very good, so we're doing it again. And since we've been talking about that, I've had a couple of patients that I've gone, oh, I think you've got B12 deficiency, because obviously it's now more in the forefront of my mind. And I know at least one of them did have it. They went to the GP and it's like, yeah, that's what you've got. But and quite interestingly, I realised that I had B12 deficiency. So I now have 3-monthly injections, which for me seems to work. That seems to be the right level for me at the moment. But yeah, it's quite interesting. We were doing all, I was like, oh, I have that. Oh, I have that. Oh, I've got that as well. Maybe I should have a test. And I was one of those ones, like you were just saying, I was like just in the normal bracket. And so I said to my GP, my GP said supplement. And I said, but I have been for 5 years. And he went, oh, have some B12 then. So it was quite interesting that, because I'd already been doing it, not maybe every day, but consistently 90% of the time, because I'd stopped before I had the blood test, because it's not good to be having B12 supplements when you have the blood test. Is that right?
That's right. The picture of B12 can stay in your blood for a good few months. Mm. So it is really sad when people have been supplementing and then find the website and then where it says all over the site, please don't supplement before testing. And what I'd always say then really is that go to the doctors, get tested, but make sure they note down on the blood form that you have been supplementing so that it is kind of noted at the lab. If that, hopefully that will help, but it's tricky because it does mean that many people then are missed. And it's interesting what you say as well, Rosie. We've spoken before and your focus then is on B12, and then you do start to notice it. And that's what we want, really, our doctors to understand, that once they get a patient in who's questioning their treatment, that, you know, it highlights it for them. And it's great to hear that you're doing okay on 3 monthly, but, you know, really keep your eye on that. And if it isn't suiting you, then certainly go back. And it really does depend on how long you've been deficient for, how long without treatment somebody has been.
Yeah, because I think I have friends who have B12 deficiency, and I know some of them are 8 weekly and some of them are at 10 weekly that they need it. And some of them just fudge it by booking their appointments a little bit earlier. And so it doesn't really get picked up because they're only wanting it 2 weeks early and no one notices. But that's maybe not the best way of managing it. But
I think the thing is that really and truly, for any other condition, a patient would be treated by their symptoms.
Yeah.
But when it comes to B12 deficiency, it's almost rationed as if it's some really ridiculously expensive medicine, or as if it's heroin and it's going to harm you. Mm. And neither of those are true. It's very inexpensive. And if you were to go to the doctor with severe pain, I don't think they'd say to you, all right, Rosie, you can have 4 painkillers a year. You know, the point is that the patient really is telling the doctor how they feel. Nobody wants more injections than they need, but they do want to be able to have their memories working and to be able to function properly so they can get to work, do their jobs properly, look after their children and you know, feel happier in their lives.
Yeah, for me it was energy levels, you know, not being exhausted at 7:30 was a revelation. I thought for me, I have young children, and I just presumed that was part of having small children, was that you get tired a lot. But actually, when I have my B12, I'm like, oh, I can stay up a bit late, not tons later, I still have small children. But it's that kind of thing, is that I have more zing, I would say. And people notice when I've had my injections because I'm a bit more bouncy. But so I can understand how good it can be for people. So if you're having trouble with your GP, not trouble, but obviously GPs have a lot to wade through, they have a lot of patients, they can't know everything. How's the best way to deal with it? Is it to take them information on your site or take someone with them to help them explain? Or,
well, I always think it is great to have somebody to support you, especially if you're cognitively affected or if you're really worried about challenging your doctor. Take somebody with you who's confident enough to help you to be able to get your words out. I would definitely take a list in of the things that you want to cover and the things you want to say. But also, you know, if you are struggling, then it's always advisable to have a look, see if there's a local advocacy group that can help. Speak to the practice manager. I also offer personalised help if people have really difficult times or just don't really want, you know, don't feel comfortable tackling it themselves. They can contact me through the contact page and I will endeavour to help.
Oh, that's good, because sometimes it can feel a bit lonely, doesn't it? If you've been for GP or been to see someone else and they're like, well, yeah, just deal with it kind of thing. Is not that anyone necessarily say that, but sometimes you can go away feeling like that, can't you, that there's no hope or there's nothing to do. So
absolutely, it can be really isolating, and it can be really isolating if your family members are saying the doctor must know what they're talking about, you've just got to do what they say, especially when your body's crying out for a vitamin it desperately needs. So yes, it can be really terrifying if you're not getting the support you need from your GP and somebody who's telling you that they know more about your body than you do.
Yeah, and it can be difficult to get that across. And I think sometimes if that's why it helps to have someone come in with you, because if you can't accurate, if your memory's not working well or you're confused, then you can't get your symptoms across, and it's difficult then for the GP to make sense of it all if you can't explain yourself, isn't it? So having someone there to help helps both you and the GP, doesn't it, to explain.
That's it. And they have such short appointment times that you really want to be succinct in what the information you're giving. So any help along those lines is would be really useful. Sometimes what I ask patients to do, if they can, is access an email address and email the GP ahead of their appointment, so that the GP can actually read up and do some research before they actually get to the appointment.
And I've always found GPs quite happy with you emailing them through the often they have it on the website, don't they, that you can email them through the practice. And I often find that the GPs are quite happy for that. you know, it's not, it's a good way of giving them, letting them know what's going to happen.
Some GPs are good, and some GPs websites allow access to that, and some really don't want any communication by email.
It depends on your GP practice, doesn't it? We're lucky around here. Ours are generally really good. So if you have a family member who's not being supportive and maybe is just saying, well, why don't you eat some more steak? Will that help you necessarily or not?
Eating steak. Yeah. If you can't absorb more food, then you're going to have real difficulty getting any B12 into your system. So no, injections are the way forward. Some people, like I say, can access a bit from supplements, sublingual supplements or drops. They don't do anything for me, but I do know people who say that they help in between injections, and some people who use those exclusively. But I don't know what the figures are on those kind of success stories, really.
So you could be like a full-on meat eater and eat meat and dairy products and stuff and still have B12 deficiency because you just can't take it out. Your body can't absorb it. Is that right?
It's not. Absolutely, yeah. I've always eaten meat, fish, eggs and dairy, and yet I can trace my symptoms right back to childhood. So I'm genetically affected, and I, even though I have eaten those products, then I was diagnosed in my early 40s, but I had already got myself a whole host of symptoms of B12 deficiency.
So if you start having B12 supplement, for the injections, can it reverse completely all the symptoms that people have?
Well, that's all dependent on how long the patient has been deficient for and how aggressively they're treated. NICE guidance says that if you are neurologically affected, you should be receiving injections every other day for as long as those symptoms take to stop improving. Okay. But many of our doctors, unfortunately, only do the loading dose of 2 weeks, three injections a week. Mm-hmm. And then they instantly put people onto 3 monthly injections because they're unaware, really, of how the patient should be treated.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? I had another question came up then, and it's just zoomed out of my head, but it will zoom back in again in a moment. So you could find that, for instance, if you were tired and having memory loss and things like that, that you could have the injections and it would all come back. So you'd start feeling well again and you'd be able to remember things. And then as those symptoms came back again, that's when you'd be wanting to look at having your B12 again.
Well, I think if you've got a whole host of neurological symptoms, then your doctor needs to really be checking on you. After the 2 weeks, they might want you to go in and see them again. And then really that's when it's really important for you to report how things are going, and that if you're improving, then fantastic, and that you want to continue to keep improving. The patient really is the key to when the injections should the frequency should slow down. If you are taking every other day injections and then you drop to 2 a week and your symptoms are coming back, then you know that you've got to up that frequency again.
Okay.
I found for me, like I said, that my optimal is a weekly injection. That keeps me with my brain functioning and everything else in working order. But dropping to less than that, then that's when problems start for me.
And so I guess some people may need injections quite a bit, like a longer loading dose, and then they can go for longer. Is that right? Or does it just all depend on the person? It's not easy to be prescribed.
It's entirely dependent. You can hopefully, and certainly for me, my memory isn't what it used to be. It used to be very pin sharp, and it's good still, but it is not what it was. And I think that is a part of my permanent damage. I still have a bit of numbness in my toes. So people can reverse entirely out of symptoms if they're treated properly and that frequency stays at the frequency for them.
So then,
unfortunately, in children, the story is not quite the same. Their systems are developing still. So if they are not treated swiftly enough, then permanent damage can occur.
Okay. So really a B12 diagnosis could be a really positive thing in a way, because essentially if it's caught soon enough and treated properly, it's quite a manageable condition.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I think it's really important as well that I say that not everything is B12 deficiency. Mm. Clearly, it really isn't. But if you have loads of symptoms and you've been screened and for other things and B12 deficiency hasn't been ruled out, then it really needs to be ruled out. And oftentimes, actually, treatment, the B12 injections can confirm the need, because if you don't need B12 and you're given B12 injections, you're not really going to notice any difference at all.
You won't get better. That's a good exclusion, isn't it? Kind of a, you know, it works one way or the other. When you're having your B12 injections, should you then supplement on folate or something like that, since you said it was quite an important it's like a sister B vitamin?
That's right. Folate is needed to be able to metabolise your B12. So it's really key. If you're low in iron, and obviously your doctor can help you with this, then you might need an iron supplement too.
Okay, good. And then is it, because you can get methylated and non-methylated B supplements, can't you? Does it make a difference which ones you have? Or
Well, it does for me. Some people can cope with folic acid and convert it easily. I can't. So I take an active form of folate. Mm. It really is down to you, and a lot of what you're taking is trial and error. I take an activated B complex too, but some people that doesn't suit. Yeah. It really is down to the individual, your own individual makeup. But a B complex is really handy alongside folate and the B12 injections.
Good. It's all very interesting, isn't it?
I find it interesting anyway.
Excellent. I was trying to think, it's the kind of take home thing is that if you're having problems with the symptoms that we can have a look at on your website, and we'll put the website on the show notes, then if you're having any of those, go and speak to your GP and have a B12 blood test, and then have some B12 if it shows you need it, and see if you improve. Is that a kind of very, not that easy, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's a page on the site called What to Do Next, and really that takes you step by step through what you need to do. So look at your symptoms, look at the causes, ask for tests, get a copy of your test, because that's really crucial that you actually see the figures. Sometimes they can be batch filed as normal, even if you're 1 point above, which means it could mean for somebody that they're severely deficient. Mm. And then it, you know, talks about making sure that your potassium intake is up, because if you're taking a lot of B12 in the beginning, then that level can drop. That page is really vital on the site. It's probably the most used page, because it just talks you step by step through what you need to do.
And as I said, your website is a brilliant resource for anyone who wants to know more about B12. Excellent. Right, let me ask you the questions I ask everyone. So what is the best piece of health advice do you think you've ever been given?
Well, there's a lovely quote by a bloke called Jim Rohn, and that says, take care of your body, it's the only place you have to live.
I like that one.
Live along that.
It's a good one. Yeah, they don't replace bits, do they? Not well, some bits, but not your whole body. And what's the piece of advice you give most people, or most common piece of health advice you give people?
Well, what I would say is don't ever watch the news. That's the best thing for your health.
Yes, I must admit, I watch a lot less news than I did a year ago. It's all just a bit, yeah. It can be a bit miserable. We need happy news, don't we? You know,
well, I think that's it. If it's happy news, but it's too depressing. You know, a lot of people watch the 10 o'clock news and just go to sleep with all that swimming around their head. The best thing to do is not watch it at all. We'll find out the things you need to find that are really important.
Check in on it in the morning, you know, check the website, see what's happened. Anything urgent that I need to worry about? Nope, right there. I'm just not going to look at it again until tomorrow. I'm sure someone will tell me if there's something I need to do. And the final question I ask is, do you have any bad habits or guilty pleasures you'd like to share with us?
I have an unfortunate habit of trying to take chairs out of skips. I think that I will reupholster one day. So our loft is currently heaving with old chairs that are projects to do.
Projects for the future. I like that optimism, though.
I will get there.
Yes, I can understand that completely. I tend to buy like secondhand furniture and chalk paint it with no real skill whatsoever, because you don't have to have skill with a chalk paint, do you? You just literally like slap it on, but never upholstering that. Pardon?
I say it's fine if you love it. You can do whatever you want to your furniture.
Exactly. But I've never tried upholstering that. I've always looked at it and then, you know, you watch someone doing it on YouTube and you realise it's after step two, you're like, no, this is not for me. This is far too skilled for me to be doing. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Tracy. It's been really super interesting to have you. And we will put the link to your website in the show notes so that people can have a look there. As I said, it's a really, really interesting resource of lots of information about B12. So, that's brilliant. So thank you so much for coming on. And thank you everyone for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the Total Health Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you need any information or links from the show, they'll be in the show notes. And if you have enjoyed it and you're a regular listener, maybe you'd leave us a 5-star review. I'd be really grateful. Or perhaps you'd share it with a friend or subscribe so you can hear our future episodes. Thank you so much. Goodbye.